They have some islands, like the bridge, like one little island off the place. And that island, anybody can go there. You know, so people from around go to that island, other people come here and try.
Hare Krishna.
Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragna Kandikam Tam Sadhiram Sadvaitam Savaritam Parajana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ravita Shri Rasha Kandikam Sva.
I might just use Krishna Yukunuri.
Straight in the temple room. Most devotees are from Iran.
Yeah.
And I think they came with Bhakti Sridhamadar. He's also here visiting for the day. His temple, you know, Gopal Mandir. And they read some books of Maharas or something, and they always wanted to, see us or whatever.
Like that.
And so they came just about 15 minutes ago. And they didn't want to disturb us or anything, and I said, well, before you go, at least we should have a kirtan together. Because, you know, I want to hear what people in Iran, how they chant Hare Krishna. So then we had a little kirtan. It was like a way of saying it. I guess it's devotees' way of saying we love each other or something. You know, they came from Iran. I was very touched. I came out, I said, I don't think I... Because they didn't look like they're from Delhi. They're a different kind of look, right?
Yeah.
I said, you're from Delhi? They said, no, we're from Iran. I said, oh, sure. I met you? I didn't recognize. I said, I met you? No, we never met, but for years we've been wanting to meet you. You know, and it's been our cherished desire to meet you, or something like this. I can't imagine that being anyone's cherished desire. At any rate, it was very touching and sincere.
Classy people, actually.
Yeah.
You know, culture.
And when we... In the early days, when our Atreya Rishi, our Guru, I used to preach there, it was quite open and free. There was a kingdom. Then there was an overthrow by the Muslims, and now it's like Nazi Germany. I mean, it's really repressed. So if you enter any kind of Hare Krishna, they know you're a Hare Krishna, you get like arrested. It's really, I mean, they're really like risking their lives practically to be a Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada said that those who go and preach in Muslim countries, that he takes the dust of their feet under his head.
They were there for 6 years in that country. I was very happy to see them. Jiva Dharma, right? The Jiva Dharma. Religion of the soul, love and service. I was speaking on that briefly. We were Christians and, you know, the Christians and Jews and Muslims, they're all coming to the fold of the Krishna conception, because it's the purest conception of understanding God. God is love and God is service. The Bhaktivinoda's telling the Jiva Dharma. It's a really beautiful movement, actually. Our Jiva Thakumaraj gave that famous lecture somewhere. The United Nations of the Spiritual World. That was one of his... There's some lecture, like famous lecture. Is it Jayapataka? I think it was Jayapataka. Yeah. That this is kind of like the United Nations of the spirit. I mean, the United Nations was trying to bring all the countries together in harmony and peace. But as Prabhupada said, every year they add another flag. There's more disunity. There was one country, then the country became infighting and became five countries. Yugoslavia, and then became Serbia, and this and that, or whatever. At any rate, we were just finishing Nam Namakari Bahudam. And reading something about Pratak Leela, that the Jatarati Sadaka, who is awakened in Bhav, he will chant the holy name of the Lord. And when he chants the second yugal of the holy name, Hare Krishna, then Hare Krishna will act like a key, and it will open the door of his heart to the Pratak Leela. So when he says Hare Krishna, then Nishant Leela comes from that yugal naam. Then when he says Hare Krishna, and then he enters into Pratak Leela. And he sees all these wonderful pastimes at sunrise, Krishna bathing, and as we heard yesterday, Krishna going to milk the cows, then Krishna wrestling. You can sit up here. You know, the sun is in your eyes. You can sit up here. You're preparing for today's discussion, Trinada Feast in Echena. You want to be lower than the lowest. It's like Panihati. Some devotees sat up in the up under the banyan tree on the banks of the Ganga with Mahaprabhu, and those that couldn't fit on the mandap, they sat on the ground below the mandap, and those that couldn't fit on the ground below the mandap, they went into the Ganges and stood in the Ganges. So that he will chant a second Hare Krishna, and that will open up this beautiful door to the Pratak Leela of Radha and Krishna. So we heard that Krishna would go to the Goshala and milk the cows, and afterwards he would engage in his favorite sport, wrestling with all the boys. And then he would go back and get washed and bathed again. And we heard how he was being dressed, and a very minute description of Krishna's bathing and dressing, and also of Radharani's. And we left off with Radharani's dressing is taking place. So this will take a few minutes to finish this reading as we did before. Then we'll begin with the third verse, Trinada Pisunichena. So if you want to chant japa and meditate on these things, or just whatever, however you want to take part, it'll be about maybe 5-8 minutes. This is the dressing of Radharani. This takes place about 7 o'clock in the morning, because she has to come get dressed, bathe and dress, and then immediately go to Nandagaon to cook Krishna's breakfast. So maybe it's more like 6:30, 6:45. So just imagine, if we can stretch our imaginations that far, that in this month in Kartik, Radharani is in Yavat, because she spends 3 months in Barsana, then she returns to Yavat and spends 3 months, and then comes back again to Barsana. So in Kartik month, Radharani is in Yavat, living there, and she's being bathed. Now she's being dressed. And we're also there, rendering different services someday. We aspire to be there. One Sakhi ties a diamond, bathed by the hue of a chaplet of fresh Malati flowers, on Radhika's head. With a red silken string, she then binds Radha's hair into a bun, which glows with a sparkling diamond and two pendulant strings of pearls. One Sakhi places upon each of Radha's ears a beautiful ornament made of a large circular pin, fastened to a small golden pin piercing the middle of her ear. Very elaborate earrings. The colorful precious stones set in this charming ear ornament cast glittering reflections in all directions. One Sundari places a shimmering string of tiny pearls on Radha's forehead, just below the edge of her hair. You often see that in paintings. Another Sakhi places two elegant diamond earrings upon Radhika's lovely ears. One Sakhi decorates Radharani's eyes with kajal and rasanjan, which is a vitriol of copper. So just a black and kind of a reddish coloring. Two different colorings are put on Radharani's eyes, which make Radha's eyes appear like a pair of Cupid's arrows. The single pearl fastened in her right nostril reflects the red and blue tints of Radha's lips and eye cosmetics. One Sakhi adorns Radhika's graceful neck with a string of gleaming pearls that hangs over her blue silk sari, resembling a broad smile. This string of pearls fills her Sakhis with delight. One Sakhi ties jeweled armlets midway upon Radha's upper arms, and other jeweled bracelets midway on her forearms. Then, the Sakhi ties a beautiful multicolored, it's called Mangala Sutra, but here it's translated, lucky thread around Radha's wrist. Sometimes you see people, they wear some red thread or string, so it's called Mangala Sutra. Sometimes, usually there's some mantras chanted in that's put around Radha's wrist, which is spun of silk and illuminated by the jewels of her bracelets. One Sakhi slips a ring on the little finger of Radha's right hand and rings on four fingers of her left hand. Another Sakhi places a beautiful necklace containing a splendid golden locket over Radha's breast. One, that locket also, incidentally, in other descriptions, she has a locket, but inside that locket there's a miniature painting of Shyamasundar. You see these miniatures like Biji Sharma, our friend Henry. You go to Washington to his house, he has he still lives there. Yeah, he used to have these miniatures painted on ivory that Biji Sharma would do with a magnifying glass. Little tiny, one inch by 1.5 inch miniatures painted on ivory, the tusk of an elephant, of Radha and Krishna, with natural earth paintings. And
they called, a huge collection of Biji Sharma.
Yeah, Henry. Yeah, these are just some fancy things on the wall.
Many, many. Yeah. He's coming in February. I'll take him over. You know him?
Yeah, you mentioned to him. Ask him if he wants to see me.
Yeah, it'll be nice. We'll come out here. I'll give you your phone number.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know Henry very well. Since 1980, in Washington, D.C., I know. Many interesting pastimes with Henry. Another Sakhi places a beautiful necklace containing a splendid golden locket. Oh, it's in there. One Sakhi ties a jeweled sash around Radhika's belly and a diamond belt below that. A gopi fixes a beautiful... I mean, it's interesting to think what kind of vision one can have when they're situated at the level of prema. In Kavikarnapur, before the Govinda Lilamrita was written, before Krishna Bhavanamrita was written, and all he had in terms of Shastra in his hand was Sanat Kumara Samhita. And he had I don't even know if the 8 verses of Rupa Goswami were written yet, summarizing the Astakali Lila. But in his meditation, he was able to see all of these things and write this down. So this is the kind of vision that's available to someone at the level of prema when they sit and do Nam Bhajan. Because he's seeing, there's no movies then. There's no movies of these things. And he didn't read any other book to get this information. This is the first revelation of all these things. This is the first book of Astakali Lila written in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Krishna Kumudi. So this is what was most thrilling thing to us when we were working on this book, attempting to edit it, which was translated by Balaswami. I kept being awestruck by how, because when I chant the holy name, I don't see anything like this. Because I'm so light years away and thousands of lifetimes away from prema. But you can imagine the rich experience he's having. He's chanting in his Nam Samadhi and then seeing this and then writing down this beautiful, beautiful screenplay. He's writing a screenplay of a beautiful transcendental movie. And so minute detail. I mean, you're seeing it. One Sakhi ties a jeweled sash around Radhika's belly and a diamond belt below that. A gopi fixes beautiful jeweled rings on Radhika's toes and anklets on her ankles. Another Sakhi ties jeweled studded ankle bells on the upper part of Radhika's feet. Someone else holds up a diamond mirror before Radha to show her the gopi's fine artistry. After decorating every part of Radhika's auspicious body and judging that it is a most delightful sight, they drape a fine woolen shawl over Radhika's shoulders. The incomparable excellence of Radha's beautiful body eclipses all beauty in the three worlds. Fragrant, beautifully dressed, and lavishly ornamented, Radha stands amidst her Sakhis. Suddenly, a famous most trusted Sakhi sent by Vrajeshwari Yashoda arrives and speaks some very pleasant words. Oh, beautiful Radhika, Krishna's mother Yashoda loves you dearly. So she sent me here with a message for you. Please listen carefully to Mother Yashoda's request. Please come to my house with your virtuous expert Sakhis and cook a variety of dishes for the pleasure of Krishna. Now listen, you girls are all respectable, humble, pious, and expert in cooking. You have firm devotion to Krishna, and you are dedicated maidservants of Braj's Queen Yashoda. Therefore, O noble girls, what I say is right. It is quite proper that you should go to Yashoda's house and cook breakfast for Krishna. This is the Sakhi speaking. After hearing these words, Radharani, the embodiment of all Lakshmis, becomes completely blissful and then gracefully walks to Nandagram to cook for Krishna. Arriving at Nandagram, beautiful Radha humbly bows down before Krishna's mother. Yashoda greets Radha, clasps her lotus hand, and immediately takes her to Rohini, who is in charge of the cooking. Youthful Radha offers respects to Rohini, the mother of Balaram, and enters the kitchen with Yashoda and Rohini. Radhika respectfully greets the kitchen staff with sweet words and a gentle smile. Radha becomes very happy seeing all the necessary ingredients and utensils for cooking, ready and waiting. See the dynamics of the love of the Brajadam. There's no such thing as high and low, or snobbery, or someone, or falsity, or that I'm a queen, I'm Rajeshri, I'm Radharani, I'm Vrindavaneshwari, and these are just the kitchen staff. Oh, what are the kitchen staff? In a modern society, they would be considered the sudras or the cleaners. And so the Brahmin cook coming into the kitchen of some rich man's house, he wouldn't pay much attention to the pot washers and kitchen staff. Because we've seen this in Delhi in these rich houses we go to sometimes, and they have their professional Brahmin cooks from South India, and they have a host of kitchen staff and servants. And but you see the sweetness and the dealings in Vrindavan. Radharani is going into the kitchen, and she's making everyone feel good, sharing her love with everyone, extending her love to everyone, making everyone feel appreciated and loved and wanted, and not neglecting or overlooking anyone or anything. Radhika respectfully greets the kitchen staff. It's not like if you write a modern novel, you say, the Brahmin cook entered the kitchen and disdainfully looked at the kitchen staff. Respectfully greets the kitchen staff with sweet words and a gentle smile. I mean, that's all we need. Sweet words and a gentle smile. If you get that, that can carry you on for your whole life. If you receive the sweet words and gentle smile of your spiritual master, that may carry you life to life. So powerful. After looking at the different kinds of pumpkins, potatoes, yams, arums, turnips, bottle gourds, eggplants, radishes, kidney beans, lady fingers, green bananas, plantain flowers, spinach, cucumbers, chickpeas, and innumerable types of greens, Radhika assigns each of the clever Sakhis an appropriate tasty dish to make for Krishna's pleasure. The kitchen maids know exactly which vegetables are most suitable for each of the different dishes to be prepared. So they begin to cut and chop them up in proper ways. Meanwhile, the Brajasundaris grind cardamom, clove, black pepper, ginger, nutmeg, mace, cinnamon, cumin, coconut pulp, black and white mustard seeds, rice, dal beans, and turmeric. The ground powders are stored in golden cups with tight-fitting lids, covered with cloths. So our Srila Prabhupada, being a part of this circle and being an expert cook, also must be expert cook in this level also. He was always telling the devotees in the deity kitchen, don't buy any powdered spices. It is all knuckly. It's all, fake. Make everything fresh for Krishna. Fresh powders. Remember, this is the standard. I mean, I was in L.A., so L.A. was like the standard for deity worship. And Prabhupada gave so many instructions in L.A. about deity worship. So everything, we had nut grinders. These grinders were grinding everything. Fresh turmeric, fresh everything. Nothing we would buy, no powders at all. Nothing powdered was bought for Thakurji. So same thing is going on in Nandagaon every morning. The Brajasundaris are busy with their nut grinders or whatever they have up there. Stones and wooden things, and everything is very fresh. The ground powders, this is why people spend lots of money to go to fancy restaurants, because what distinguishes a restaurant is they have all fresh ground spices. That's what makes the food taste so good. Of course, they're expert cooks, but one of the biggest elements is the spicing, which they use. You won't find any five-star restaurant that uses powdered. It's all freshly ground. But then when we have our kitchens cooking for Krishna, we go out and buy some curry powder or this masala, that masala, already made. But yet some stupid five-star restaurant serving some lechis and yavanas, they have the finest, the freshest ground powders. You see? So Prabhupada, he brought down the spiritual standard, Radhika's standard, he brought down into the kitchens of ISKCON. Pure-hearted Radha then sets her heart on the pastime of cooking. Beautiful Radhika puts aside any unnecessary ornaments and clothing and then washes her lotus hands and feet. With great respect and eagerness, Radha joins Rohini Ma at the best of kitchen stoves to begin cooking. At Rohini Ma's signal, the girls place nicely cut pieces of wood into the fires and set artistically crafted cooking pots of copper, brass, and silver on top of the ovens. The fires produce no smoke and blaze a brilliant red without any need for fanning. Only a little moisture sizzles from the burning wood. Whenever salt is needed for the various dishes, the maid servants put just the right amount into Radha's hand. It's interesting, godbrother of ours who was born in Vrindavan as a Brahmin, he was teaching us cooking, or trying to teach us cooking. And he was explaining, I was saying, how much? And he said, everything you put in your right hand, and then because you're sincerely trying to please Krishna, then Lakshmi Devi will guide you, because Lakshmi Devi resides in your right hand. Because I can't believe he would take the salt and just put his hand and then throw it in, and everything was perfectly spiced. Because in the West, usually it's so many grams and so many teaspoons and so many. And then the first time I ever met an Indian cooking, I don't know exactly, I never saw Prabhupada cooking, but he said that, I said, this is, how can I follow? How can I even take notes or learn? He said, you're a devotee, you're chanting Hare Krishna, Radha and Krishna, and Lakshmi is also Radha. He said, you do like this. I was never quite able to transcend my attachment to the rules and regulations of cooking with the teaspoons and cups. But this, we see Radharani is cooking the same way. The original Lakshmi, they would put just the right, and it was all put in Radharani's hand. She wasn't throwing spices or salt with any spoon. It was her hand. It's interesting. The leaves are cooked in mustard oil to produce the correct variety of taste. Two kinds of preparation are made. I hope everyone had lunch, otherwise this would be a little difficult hearing all this. Two kinds of preparations are made by mixing ground mustard, ginger, and coconut with jackfruit seeds. Many excellent preparations are made using pumpkin, potato, kachu, there's no translation, and radish. One preparation contains mustard, ginger, and bitter leaves fried in mustard oil. Sounds like neem bacon, was it? Yeah, like neem. A tasty dish is made from small pieces of eggplant cooked with mung dal patties, along with ground ginger and pieces of coconut fried in mustard oil. So mustard oil is also going on up there. Because a lot of the devotees from the West, they say, oh, these Bengalis, they like this mustard oil. This we don't like. You know, this, we like ghee or whatever, safflower oil or something. But our Prabhupada liked the mustard oil. And it's going on up there. Small pieces of eggplant, yam, carola, banana flour, mun, kachu, patola, and white pumpkin are dried and deep fried. Eggplant, green banana, coconut, chickpeas, and mung dal patties are mixed along with pepper and sugar to create two different dishes in huge quantities, one spicy, the other sweet. A soup with an excellent aroma is made from beans mixed with coconut and pitu root, mixed with lots of ghee, hing, ginger, and raw sugar. That's chuggery, right? Gore. Another dish is made by mixing finely ground coconut, sugar syrup, milk, and mung dal. A delicious mung soup is produced by spicing it with cardamom, clove, pepper, hing, and ginger. One soup is made using skinned whole mung beans. That's quite a feat. Which are boiled, mixed with milk, and spiced with cardamom, clove, pepper, hing, and sugar. With unrivaled expertise, Radha prepares a fourth soup in large quantity from husked beans and chopped radish with lots of ghee, hing, and pepper. Radha selects the best banana flowers and finally chops them after discarding the fibers. Cooking them with milk, hing, and pepper, Radha makes a dish called maricha. She makes another dish by dicing mand and rashi. Radha skins some unripe jackfruits and cooks them with dal patties, hing, pepper, and other spices. She slices a bottle gourd, that's something like loki, I think, a bottle gourd in long, fine strips, boils it in water and milk, and stirs it until it thickens. By adding sugar, pepper, cumin, hing, and other spices, it's interesting, cumin and sugar, Radha produces another delectable dish. Radha makes a sour yogurt dish by mincing ripe pumpkin, frying it in mustard oil, spicing it with ginger, hing, and anise, and thickened buttermilk. She cuts radish and puru into circles and cooks them in yogurt and black sugar. Radhika creates another sour preparation by adding tamarind to this dal. Chickpea flour, yogurt, turmeric, and citron juice are mixed and formed into soft, attractive balls called kanjika bati. Radha makes yet another sour preparation by mixing green mango with mustard seeds and frying it in ghee. A sweet and sour preparation is produced by mixing ripe mango with water, sugar, and milk. Radhika combines roasted sesame with dried mango to make another sour preparation. One spectacular dish is made from toasted sesame and cinnamon. Green and ripe mangoes are mixed with sweetened milk and hing to produce more sour dishes. Thus, Radha cooks innumerable preparations with enticing aromas for the pleasure of Krishna, Balaram, Nanda, and Yashoda. She places the pots of finished items on jeweled and golden trays after covering them with gold and jeweled inlaid lids. While the maidservants fan her, Radha makes sweets and cakes and engages her sakis in various sevas. Cakes are prepared from coconut, rice, roasted sesame, and milk. Warm filtered water is poured over these and then they are left covered. After adding condensed milk, these cakes will be called chitra, which means variegated. An exotic, huge sweet ball named Sara Dugda Kupi is prepared from cream mixed with pepper, camphor, and raw sugar. Varieties of pishtakas are produced using mung dal and other ingredients. Jilavika, Matahari, Puru, Pupa, Gaja, Nadi, Saraswati are also made. The talented sakis also make Kai Chura, Dharimaka, Sarkara, Palamukta, and Laduka. There's no translation for these. I couldn't find. They made them, whatever they are. They made Ladu from condensed curdled milk. They also made Manohar, Hamsakeli, Sobarika, Dhaivara, Gola, Bhara, Atakeli, and Veni. Or Veni, that we know. It's wheat noodles cooked in milk and sugar. With great speed and skill, Radha and her sakis made Chandrakanti, Lalita, Amritpuli, and many other excellent sweets. Lalita and other sakis prepare milk, yogurt, butter, buttermilk, sarabaji, shrikhan, and many other edible and flavorful drinks. It actually keeps going. I didn't realize that. I thought it was only the end of the chapter. Oh, there's only one more page. Because all this is made, so something has to happen now. Krishna has to eat. So this is the finish of the Pratak Leela, which is part of this Nam Namakari Bahuda and the second Hare Krishna. This is Sarusanga, Bhajana Kriya, and Narta Nivirti. Entering the dining hall, colorful festoons and it's like flag type. Festoons and tapestries fill the royal dining hall with festive vibrations. Many jeweled inlaid bowls of vegetable preparations sit along the edge of the gem-studded dining tables. Behind the vegetables are numerous bowls of delicious sweets and rows of milk products arrayed in golden bowls. Radha Sakis create a wonderful atmosphere by artistically arranging the preparations in a half circle and other designs. In the middle of everything, they place a golden platter containing a huge mound of aromatic white rice dripping with ghee. On the right side, there is a plate of condiments containing ghee, lemon slices, pickles, ginger, mango, and mustard sauce. That sounds like that stuff they have in Mayapur in a bottle. What's that called? Kusundi? Kusundi. It's a favorite of Maharaj's. Bhaktivedanta. What's it made? It's made from Ganga Jala and mustard seeds or something like that. It's really quite good. So maybe it's something like that. Mustard sauce. There are jugs of camphor-scented drinking water waiting next to the condiments. Upon seeing Radha's expertise in cooking and the amazing arrangements of the Sakis, Mother Yashoda sends a nurse to bring Krishna and Balaram. Being called by the nurse, Krishna and Balaram eagerly walk to the hall. Wearing splendid yellow cloth, Krishna offers respects to Mother Yashoda, and under her direction, she allows some young girls to wash Krishna's feet and offer water for rinsing his mouth. Yashoda reels with joy upon seeing this. Krishna sits down and becomes completely astonished to see all the delectable preparations. Then Krishna, his Brahmin friend Madamangal, Balaram and the coward boys accept water in their hands as part of the dining ritual. The water in Krishna's hand turns red from the radiance of his lotus palm. The boys start eating after various mothers pronounce blessings. May this meal turn into nectar. Rohini and Mother Yashoda serve the food in the proper order, and Krishna eats accordingly. The food preparations taste so good that Krishna cannot stop eating them once he starts. Although Krishna desires and has the ability to devour each item, he is afraid that his onlookers may criticize him for being a glutton. Therefore, he only tastes a little of each preparation. Balaram and other coward boys loudly praise the expertise of the cooking. Krishna, however, keeps quiet. But within his mind, he repeats, "Very delicious, very delicious." This is his manasik japa. There are many preparations in huge quantities, and after sampling a little sweet rice, Krishna wants to eat them all. To satisfy Yashoda and attract the attention of that expert cook named Radha, Krishna eats the spinach and other items with great gusto. Krishna's jokes and sweet words give immense pleasure to all his friends. Krishna says, "Listen, boys, eat, eat, don't leave anything behind." Although Krishna eats each vegetable preparation with a little rice, his greed to enjoy each item remains unsatisfied. While praising each of his favorite cakes and milk sweets, Krishna eats them with great happiness. Mother Yashoda and Rohini implore Krishna, "Eat more, eat more." But Krishna pretends to be full, though internally he can never be satisfied. After finishing his meal, Krishna washes and dries his lotus feet, hands and mouth. Then he chews some spices and tambul before lying down on a soft bed suitable for the gods. As Krishna happily sleeps, Vishakha and others take a cue from Radha to collect Krishna's remnants in a bowl and distribute them to the young male and female servants. See the angle of vision. Usually when there's a Janmashtami or something and we have a friend in the pujari department, we give him an empty tiffin, right? I mean, this is what I've seen, because some brahmacharya will hand me an empty tiffin if I'm doing puja and say, "Can you collect some maha from Radha Shyamasundara and save it for me or give it to me?" So Radharani's collecting maha to give to the not for herself or even her intimate friends, but to the male and female servants the kitchen staff. The Sakis ponder, how can Radha take Krishna's remnants when Nanda, Yashoda, and their friends have not yet eaten? The Sakis wait patiently beside Radha, even though they want to take her to the resting place and massage her lotus feet to remove the fatigue of cooking. Understanding the mood of the Sakis, Yashoda says, take Radha to the resting room now, and later I will call her to the dining room. The Sakis quickly escort Radha to her room so she can see Krishna leaving for the forest. So that's the end of Pratak Leela, Kavi Karnapur's rendition of that. Each of the acharyas have given us different insights into their heart's meditation on Krishna's eternal pastimes. And by reading the various renditions of Vishnu Chakravarti and Krishna's Kaviraj, Narada Muni's Nath Kumara Samhita, and Bhagavatam, you get a very rich and varied composite view of the sweetness of the dealings and the expertise and the services that are rendered on that level of Astakali Leela. Where's Gopi's there? I need that Chaitanya Charitamrita also. It's on the desk, on top of the desk. So now we're going to begin the third verse of Shikshastakam. It's called Tritiya Yam Sadhana. And here, Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he explains this is... Thank you. Thanks. It's called practicing devotional service on the level of steadiness. So this third yama, or this third lila period of Krishna, Radha and Krishna, is called Purvan, Purvan Kaliya Bhajan, Nishtha Bhajan. And this goes from 8:36 in the morning until 10:48. Well, here it says 11 a.m. It says 8:30 to 11 a.m. And this is considered to be Nishtha. So this verse, the third verse of Shikshastakam, contains the qualities of one at the level of Nishtha, Nishtita Bhakti. He displays these four qualities, and which are humility and tolerance and pridelessness and respect for all, these four qualities, Trinada Pisa Nichena. So there's a small introduction, just following our notes here in this verse. Trinadapi sunichena turor api sahishana amanina amanidena kirtaniya sadahari. The translation here, thinking oneself to be even lower and more worthless than insignificant grass that has been trampled beneath everyone's feet, being more tolerant than a tree, being prideless and offering respect to everyone according to their respective positions, one should continuously chant the holy name of Sri Hari. That's one translation. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he gives some introduction to this verse in his commentary on Shikshastakam. He says that by constitutional nature, the jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna. Therefore, whether living in the material or spiritual world, chanting the holy name of Krishna is the eternal dharma, or activity, of the living entity. Out of causeless mercy for the conditioned souls, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu composed this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, to describe how one may chant the holy name free from Nam Aparad and Nam Abhas. Because in the verse 2 of Shikshastakam, Nam Namakari Bahuda Anija Sarva Shaktis, Lord Chaitanya is saying, Duradevam Ihajani Nano Raga. He's saying, Duradevam, I'm very unfortunate. Duradevam, Durjana. I'm very bad, I'm very unfortunate. And what is my misfortune? My misfortune is that I received this wonderful name, Nijasarva Shakti, that has all powers, as we heard from the commentaries of the Acharyas, it's Nijasarva Shakti, Nijasarva Rasa, Nijasarva Bhava, all different rasas are there, all different bhavas are there, all different powers are there. But me, when I take this holy name, Durdevam, I make offenses. I commit offenses. And the proof that I'm committing offenses, that when I'm chanting the holy name, tears are not rushing from my eyes, my hair is not standing on end. And these are preliminary symptoms of bhava, or even just some feelings, it's called bhava bas, where when one is not chanting without aparad, then you'll have some sentiments will arise by contacting the holy name, and it will cause some minor transformations in the body, tears in the eyes, and some slight trembling, and maybe some few hairs in the arm may stand on end. But look at me, I'm so unfortunate. I have no anurag. I have no attachment to the holy name. So what to do? Well, this kind of feeling that's created by deeply doing bhajan, according to the second shloka, meditating on the meanings of these words and praying for Mahaprabhu to reveal these types of sentiments and type of appreciations and gratitudes for the holy name that are contained in Nam Namakari, that will create a sense of humility in us. And then, because that's what Bhaktivinoda is saying, that Lord Chaitanya is saying, oh, you want to know how to become fortunate and how to transcend this position of anarthas, these 18 different types of, 16 different types of anarthas that were being described. Well, then you have to overcome these anarthas, not parads, we have to become very, very humble and think of ourselves as just like a trina, like a blade of grass, and be respectful to all. So this is the 4-point program to becoming steady, and this is the 4-point program to become fortunate. And this is the way Lord Chaitanya himself, he's showing the problem. The problem is I'm unfortunate. The problem is I am an aparadi, and I have no attachment. So what's the solution to the problem? So then he gives a solution in the third verse. Well, seeing all these deficiencies in yourself, or in ourselves, then our response should be, oh, I'm wretched, I'm fallen. And then we become somewhat humble, and become very much in a prayerful mood, praying to Nam Prabhu, please. And this is what is being told here. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu composed this verse to describe how one may chant the holy name, how to become free from nama aparad, nama bas. We must have some taste, some earnestness to accept the holy name. But there's the difficulty. We don't have any. We don't have any taste, and we don't have earnestness means sincerity. So what hope can we have? We may be approaching the holy name formally, but not from the core of our hearts. Oh, we're chanting Hare Krishna. It's a formality. It's to be done. When you first come to ISKCON, they say you have to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we, by duty, by force, by formality, we chant. But is it coming from the core of our heart? So by what process can we really benefit and make progress? So the third verse of Shikshastakam answers this question, how we can make benefit. Krishna's Kaviraj is explaining in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about how important this verse is. He says that of the 8 verses, this verse should be worn on our neck like a necklace. And some devotees I've seen over the years, they tattoo this verse on their neck. I've seen some devotees, in Hindi or Sanskrit, they tattoo the verse Trinadapi, because it says that this verse, we should wear this verse around our neck like a garland. So they think that means to put a tattoo on their neck. I mean, that's one way, but actually it's an invisible garland. It's a garland of attitude. It's a garland of mentality. It's a garland of qualities that may not be seen physically. Well, it will be seen also physically, but it's not that you tattoo it on your neck. Trinadapi sunichina turor iva sahishnuna trinadapi. It goes like that. I've seen. Nice. If they have that and the qualities that are in the shloka, then very good, very fine. But he's saying, he's raising his hands. He's really being very emphatic by this body language. It's one thing to say, Prabhu, you should do this. But it's another thing to say, Prabhu, you should do this! You raise your hand and say, you should do this. I mean, it's quite emphatic. So he's saying, Urdhva Bahukari. Right, his arms and hands. Kaham shunav sarva lok, nam sutre ganti para kante e shlok. Raising my hands, Urdhva, I declare, everyone, Sarvalok. That means everyone on every planet. Shun, Sarvalok. Everyone on every planet, listen. Everyone on every planet, please hear me. String this verse, Trinada Peace Nation, on the thread of the holy name and wear it on your neck for continuous remembrance. So, this is Krishna's Kaviraj is telling us how important this verse is, because once we embody these four qualities to the deepest extent, then there's no more namaparad, and then we come to the platform of nishtha, then our advancement starts to go quite quickly. But until then, we're floundering and swimming in the vast intermediate zone in the middle of the ocean. There's some titles. Some of the different acharyas have given titles for this verse. One is, Bhaktivinoda says, what is the process to chant the holy name? What is the process? What is the system? What is the process? This verse tells. This is the process. These 4 points. Another acharya says, humbler than a blade of grass. This is the title. This verse means humbler than a blade of grass. And someone else says, who is qualified to chant? This is asked the question. Who is qualified to chant? Someone who has these attributes of humility and tolerance and pridelessness and respect for all. The non-prabhu, Radha and Krishna, they will come on that person's tongue. No more syllables. Akshara means syllables. Akshara. It will not be akshara, it will be actual nam. So this is who is qualified to chant. One who has these qualities will actually be really chanting. Srila Prabhupada, he gives a translation of this verse in Antya Lila, chapter 20, text 21. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. So in this context, when Lord Chaitanya uttered this wonderful Shikshastakam, then he also gave a few verses of commentary himself. And then on this verse, he's actually commented more, except for Shilashivah Parvatam Parashtamam, he's given more verses of personal commentary than any other of the 8 verses of Shikshastakam, because it's so important. So he spoke this in Sanskrit, and then to convey the intricacies of the Sanskrit to his fellow Navadvipa Vasis, he put the same concepts into Bengali. Uttam hana apanake mane trinadam dvipakare sahishnuta kari bhikshasam. Mahaprabhu said, these are the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, what are those symptoms? Humility, tolerance, right? Lower than a straw in the street. Tolerance, more tolerant than a tree. Respect all, and not expect any respect in return. Although, the person who chants Hare Krishna may be very exalted, he thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground. And like a tree, he tolerates everything in 2 ways. So it says, dvipakare, kare vriksha sama. Vriksha, like kalpa vriksha. Vriksha means tree, sama means equal to. So like a tree, he tolerates dvipakare in 2 ways. What are those 2 ways? Vriksha jena katileha kichuna bolai, shukhan maileha kare pani namaghai magaya. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest, and even when drying up, it does not ask anyone for water. So this is one thing. In other words, there's dui prakar. There are 2 ways that we have to learn from the tree. The second is jehi ye magaye tare de apanadhan gharna vrishti sahi aner karaya rakshan. The tree delivers its fruits, flowers, and whatever else it possesses to anyone and everyone. It tolerates scorching heat and torrents of rain, yet it still gives shelter to others. So there's these 2 qualities that the second one is the tolerance. Not only the tree is tolerating, but he's also giving and doesn't protest. So this is humility. The tree is being cut down, it doesn't protest. It's drying up, it doesn't ask anyone for water. In the summertime, there's no rain for weeks on end, and the leaves are all drying up and the branches are crackling from the hot, from the heat. It's not saying, so this is the humility of the tree, that so we can learn. If I am cut down, I don't protest, because what do I have to protest? I'm lower than a straw in the street. This is the idea. But yet it's not okay. I'm cut down. I don't protest. I take everything in a humble way, but I won't give in. I'll keep my things to myself. But the tree is being cut down, being burned by the fire, and still it delivers its fruits and flowers and whatever else. And someone comes, all these branches, I have to cook some chapatis, let me cut these few limbs off this tree. There's no protest. To anyone and everyone, it tolerates scorching heat and torrents of rain, yet it still gives shelter to others. So now, Lord Chaitanya goes on, Uttamhana Vaishnavahave Nira Abhiman Jive Samana Dibe Jani Krishna Arishtan. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, Uttam Hana Vaishnava, Havi Nir Abhiman. He is prideless, he has no Abhiman. And he gives all respect to everyone. Jive Sam Man Dibe Jani. Jani, why does he give respect to everyone? Because he knows everyone to be the Stan, Krishna Stan, the Adistan, the resting place of Krishna. And we have Leela Stan, Krishna Leela Stan. So he's an Uttam Vaishnava, but he's priveless and he offers respect. Why does he offer respect to everyone? Because he sees his Ishtadeva in everyone's heart. He sees Krishna in everyone's heart. Krishna is resting in everyone's heart. Krishna Stan, Adistan. E matahana jay Krishna naam lai, Sri Krishna charane tanga preme upajai. If one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna naam lai, laya. You take Krishna's name, E mata, in this way, Sri Krishna charane prema upajai. We'll attain the lotus feet of Krishna, and from that, chant darshan of the mercy of Krishna's lotus feet, then prem upajai will awaken. So those are verses directly spoken by Lord Chaitanya about kind of a little bit more elaboration on the meaning. So this is the one who is humbler than a blade of grass, more forbearing than a tree, and who gives due honor to others is qualified to always chant the holy name of the Lord. Now, in the Bhajan Rahasyam, this starts, as I mentioned, begins here. There's some purport to this verse, Trinada Pisme Chanel. Four symptoms are observed in sadhakas who chant the holy name of Krishna, free from all offenses. In other words, we can do like converse approach to this. If this is true, then this is true. If one is free from offenses, then he'll have these qualities. And if one doesn't have these qualities, then that means he's not free from offenses. So if one is free from all offenses, he will have the quality natural humility born of complete detachment from sense objects. It's a very interesting definition. Natural humility born from complete detachment, born of complete detachment from sense objects. Two, he will have pure compassion devoid of envy. Three, purity of heart and freedom from false ego. Four, an attitude of respect towards everyone according to their position. The phrase Tara Api Sahishchana refers, like we say, kapaturu, so taro is tree, the tolerance of a tree. A tree is so tolerant that it does not forget to show kindness by offering its cool shade and sweet fruits even to a person who comes to cut down the tree. Since Krishna's devotees are even more merciful than a tree, They show kindness to all, both friend and enemy. This is compassion completely free from envy. That's interesting. One may show compassion to a friend or to a neutral party, but if some opposite party comes or an enemy comes and one's not compassionate, so that means that their compassion is limited or selective, and the reason they're selecting because there's some envy. This is what's being told here. So compassion free from envy means that you'll show compassion to anyone, friend, enemy, it doesn't matter. Although such devotees are topmost in the kingdom of bhakti, they remain free from pride. They know that Krishna resides in the hearts of all living entities, and therefore give all living entities appropriate respect. Such persons are truly eligible to perform Sri Krishna Nam Kirtan. Hare Krishna. And only performers of Sri Krishna Nam Kirtan can attain Krishna Prem. We broke this verse down into these sections, these 4 points. The first point of humility, to be humbler or lower than a blade of grass. Trina adapi sunichena. Trina means grass, as we mentioned some days ago when Balaram vanquished Ramaharshan Sutta. The verse in the Bhagavatam says it, Trinankurai, that he took a blade of grass, Trina, and hit him in the head, and that was the end of Ramaharshan. So this is, Trina means blade of grass, and Su Niche means below or down. And Su means very. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explaining. The material dualities, which are manifest reactions of one's previous activities. Very interesting description. And we face dualities, sometimes happiness, sometimes distress, honor, dishonor, all these things, heat and cold. The material dualities, which are manifest reactions of one's previous activities, which is called prarabdha karma, like loss and gain, happiness and distress, life and death, they have nothing to do with spiritual reality. The ego of grass is real. You know, all the grass out there, everyone's sitting on, or some devotees are sitting on. So the ego, the hankar, the ego of the grass, this is real. The grass is thinking, I'm just a lowly piece of grass. Fit, I am fit to be stepped on by everyone. But our egos are inappropriate because they are not related to our constitutional nature as eternal spirit souls. Therefore, it's proper for me to become lower than a blade of grass. It's very interesting. A pure devotee will display natural humility born of complete detachment from material sense gratification. Material sense enjoyers are blind to the reality of their insignificance due to being intoxicated with material enjoyment. Because when you're intoxicated, if you drink too much white lightning, you go blind. White lightning is a colloquial term for homemade liquor, homemade whiskey. Some countries, in the mountains in India, or any mountainous place, usually the mountain people in Manipur and places, they make homemade whiskey, homemade liquor. So they call it white lightning. So if you don't make it right, there's too much alcohol and you go blind. So people in material enjoyment, they're intoxicated by material enjoyment, so they're blind to their insignificance. They can't understand. They think, I'm so big. I'm a very big man. I have so much money, so much position, so much influence, prime minister of the country, president of America, this, that, the other thing. They are blind to the reality of their insignificance. The grass is actually better than me. A blade of grass has no misdirection. When grass is trampled upon, it has no tendency to spring back in the opposite direction. A blade of grass can be blown here and there by a storm. But I, on the other hand, I will always be reluctant to go in a particular direction. If the waves of the environment want to take me in a particular direction, I will try to oppose. If you really consider my value, my position, it is actually lower than a blade of grass, because I have an opposing tendency, a fighting nature within me. It is my tendency to oppose the grace of the Lord. This is my position. But a blade of grass won't oppose anyone. So the analogy here is that the grass, not only in terms of position of humility, but even in terms of position of, you can say, of superiority, that the grass is better than me, because the grass is, it will just go here and there, it will go with the flow, wherever the wind blows it. It doesn't have an opposing tendency, doesn't spring back. But if someone says, oh, you should become a devotee, you should serve the Lord, human life is actually meant for this, for realizing God, not rotting in this material world. Oh, what are you talking about? Oh, this is hogwash. This is all hogwash, this is BS, I don't believe it. You're crazy, you're brainwashed. Get a job, make money, be happy. So there'll be opposing tendency. Humility is indicated here by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When one begins to practice devotion toward the infinite Lord, he cannot but feel, it's very clear who this is, Srila Sridhar Maharaj. When one begins to practice devotion toward the infinite Lord, he cannot but feel that in relation to the infinite, I have nothing to give in return. I have no qualification. I am completely empty. A true devotee feels within his heart that he is not only unfit, but too despicable for the Lord's service. We should think, I am nothing. I have no qualifications for being accepted or used in the service of the Lord. I am completely unfit. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself said, I don't find even a trace of a scent of love for Krishna within my heart. This is told in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Na prema ganda. He says, ganda. Lord Chaitanya, you're dancing in prema nam and your tears are shooting from your eyes like a fountain. You must be full of prema. He said, are you kidding? I'm only making a show. This is only a show, external show. I don't have a scent, a ganda. I don't even have a fragrance, just one whiff of prema in my heart. To genuinely feel that we possess nothing and that everything is Krishna's, that is the only qualification for chanting the holy name of Krishna. Within this verse, Lord Chaitanya teaches the world that the only way to protect oneself from offenses is to chant with humility. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is defining humility is that feeling which makes the most qualified person consider himself to be most low and unqualified. Because often when they're describing the definition of humility, they're referring to someone who actually has a lot of things going for them. If we're very poor, there are different fruits of piety that one receives upon birth, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shribir, which is explained, very wonderful birth in a high class family, beautiful bodily features, education, wealth, and power. These are the fruits of previous charity and sukriti and pious deeds of previous life. But if one is devoid of all those things, has low birth, and no caste at all, and not very much, or an insignificant bodily beauty, and no real wealth or any attributes to speak of. And then that person who has nothing, he's not exalted in any category of ordinary exaltation, and he exhibits some humility. Well, he doesn't have any choice. He has nothing to be proud of, so of course even the pauper is proud of his penny, but nevertheless, often, usually in the definition of humility, they're saying when someone has a lot, like Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were the epitome of humility, but look what they had. They were Brahmins, Saraswat Brahmins, and they were Shutidharas, and they were Chaturvedis, and they were ministers of the king, and they had boatloads of gold, and had beautiful bodily features, and aristocracy and culture, and they knew 5 or 10 languages. They had so much exaltation, and they came before Lord Chaitanya with straw in their teeth. Sanatana Goswami, they're biting straw, literally had straw, a piece of kusa grass, I suppose, in between their teeth, and they came to surrender at his feet. I said, I'm a fool. I don't know anything. People call me a learned man. Actually, I don't know who I am. I don't even know who I am. I'm a fool. I don't know anything. So that was the example of genuine humility, when having so much and displaying that, I'm nothing. Lying at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and sobbing and crying, Kripakaro, Kripakaro, please. And then Lord Chaitanya bent down and picked up Sanatana and embraced him. So this is why, generally, this is the definition. It's repeatedly, humility is that feeling which makes the most qualified person consider himself to be most low and unqualified. When one realizes the supremacy of God and acts in his true identity as the Lord's eternal servant, he will become overwhelmed with feeling of humility. Humility is the life force of the holy name. Actually, Prabhupada often would cite the example of, I think it was Isaac Newton. I think it was a scientist, famous scientist in the Middle Ages named Isaac Newton. Discovered something, I don't know, gravity or something. And then he was commenting in his biography, he said, because he was a very learned, genius type scientist, and Prabhupada would often cite him as an example of humility. When he was asked, he said, All I have done is collected a few grains of sand from the beach of knowledge, beach of unlimited knowledge. I picked up a few grains of sand. He was some famous award-winning scientist, Isaac Newton, 500 years ago, discovered gravity, I think. So Prabhupada said, see this person is appreciating that actually whatever discovery he made was given by God, and that he was an insignificant instrument in the will of the Lord. He didn't claim any proprietorship over that discovery, nor did he falsely claim that he was the doer of it. He just collected. It was already there. I picked up a few grains of sand. So when one actually attains some bandhagyan, actual knowledge of the Lord and his relationship with the Lord, then he actually understands very clearly how Krishna is doing everything. Krishna is actually doing everything. Aham sarvasya bhavavo mata sarvam bhavartati. Everything is moving and controlled by the Lord. And because until that point, there's different degrees from a gross materialist who says, I did it, I did this, and I did that, and I did everything. And then you come to the Kanishtha Adhikari and the Madhyama Adhikari. Well, you know, Krishna did it with me, and or Krishna and I both did it. Krishna helped me do it. There's all different versions of insufficient realization. But in the purest stage of realization, one understands that Krishna is doing everything. Nimitta matram. Krishna told Arjuna in Gita, he said, just be an instrument in my hands. You're the hammer, and I do everything else. I will build the house. I will put the nail in. I will do everything. Just be the hammer. Just be the instrument in my hands. So that takes realization, and that vigyan, and realization requires gyan, bhakti gyan, tattva gyan. So when one really realizes the supremacy of God, it doesn't just mean, oh, the Christians say, yes, I realize the supremacy of God. God is great. God is the supreme controller, supreme creator. Okay. And then you say, oh, who built this house? Oh, I built this house. Acha. You made the wood? Yes, I made the wood. You made the sand? I made the sand. You made the water? I made the water. You made the iron and the steel? Yes, yes. Acha, very good. So, the realization is this, will create absolute humility. The greater the realization, the greater the humility. So this is what's being told here. When one realizes the supremacy of God and acts in his true identity as the Lord's eternal servant, he will become overwhelmed. He will become overwhelmed with the feeling of humility. Humility is the life force of chanting the holy name. If we want the holy name to come down and dance on our tongue, we must come to this stage of having these four qualities. The grass in your yard is not showing off. The grass is not trying to impress others. Oh, look, I'm very humble. See how humble I am? There are millions and millions of grass. They're common everywhere. It's not a big thing. But for a devotee, when he's trying to realize the supremacy and greatness of Krishna and trying to act in a humble way, then Maya starts, is always whispering in the ear of the devotee. Oh, Prabhu, you're special. You're better than them. In so many ways, you'll try to whisper in the ears, "Oh, you're really special. You know, you did this or you did that," and they don't know, or they, you know, you're special, better than them. So this is what Maya will whisper in the ear. Now, the point. So how can we hear the name? How can we hear the holy name while we're listening to the whispers of Maya? We're always hearing, there's this little voice, "Actually, you know, you're really special, you know, you do this and you did that and you do this and that and you're really special." So, in other words, if you're talking to someone, it's very hard to hear two people, it's hard to hear two people speaking at the same time. Usually you say, wait a minute, you know, you speak and then you speak, you know, like this. So how can we hear the name while we're listening to Maya? Humility is the key to receiving Krishna. For example, if we want Hari Katha to touch our hearts, then we must bow down. We must bow down to the holy Granth. We must bow down to the author. We must bow down to the speaker of the Hari Katha. We must bow down to the listeners of the Hari Katha. We must bow down to the place where the Hari Katha is spoken. The topics about Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna, which are non-different from Krishna, will be pleased with our expression of humility, and they will come into our hearts like a chain, one after another, while chanting Hare Krishna. We see, if we move in the Vaishnava Raja Sabha, the association of the Vaishnavas, that they, especially in Bengal, and Orissa also, that if you go to an assembly where there's a Bhagavat Saptaha, someone is speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's mostly in Gaudiyas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. If you're there, and because we have the opportunity, and then people come in, when the first thing that the yatris or the listeners, when they come in, as soon as they get to the grounds, which is demarcated as some park or some pandal, as soon as they get to the grounds, they at the entrance, they lie on the ground and start rolling on the ground. They're rolling on the ground to humbly show the respect to the place where the Bhagavat Katha is being spoken. That's the first thing to do at the entrance. They're rolling on the ground. It's very, you know. And then when you first see it, because, you know, you always see Bengalis rolling around here and there. But then when someone explains what's going on, and then you understand, then they come in and they go like this. They go like this with folded hands. They look towards all the women on one side in the row up to the speaker, and the men on the other side. And then they point towards the men and they roll on the ground. And they point towards the ladies and roll on the ground. Then there's a center aisle. There's a center aisle which goes to the speaker. On one side, ladies. On left side is ladies and right side is men, and the speaker is looking. So then they lie down and do dandavats to the speaker of the Bhagavatam. This is even before they've taken their seat. And then they offer obeisance to the Bhagavatam. All the things are being said. So in other words, their approach is so humble. So Krishna Katha is pleased. The Krishna's pastimes are pleased. So then, by this humility, they attract the content of that holy grant comes into their heart, and they hear very nicely. But you see how we come, you know, Bhagavatam class starts, and now Jaya Radha Madhava is going on, and we want to catch a few more rounds, so we're out on the outside the temple, hopefully chanting rounds and not for japa. but maybe talking for japa. And we're chanting a few rounds, and then the class starts, and then it goes on for a few minutes, and then we say, it's almost over, I better hear a little bit of the Bhagavatam class, and in case the temple commander asks me if I went to the Bhagavatam class, I can say yes. So then I run in, I just run in and sit down. You know, and we expect that something will come inside our hearts or something. That's, of course, something will, because we've gone there, we hear. So this is a point that's being made here, emphasizing this point of humility. I'll read it again just to further impress the idea. For example, if you want Hari Katha, the topics about Krishna, or the pastimes of Krishna, to touch our hearts, then we must learn to bow down to the holy book, the holy Granth. The author of the book, Krishna's Kaviraj, in terms of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the speaker, the listeners to the Hari Katha, we bow down to one another, and the place where it's being spoken. Then that Hari Katha and the pastimes of Krishna, which are actually non-different from Krishna, will be pleased with our expression of humility by our humble approach, and they will happily come and enter our hearts like a chain, like in a sequence, one after another, while we're chanting Hare Krishna. In other words, the pastimes of the Lord are being spoken, and you approach those pastimes with this type of humility. Later, when we're chanting the holy name, Maha Mantra, then those pastimes that we heard will come in the heart during the time of chanting Hare Krishna. This first phrase, Jinadapi Sunechena, Bhaktivinoda Thakur refers to in several verses. Is there any questions about this at this point? Usually you have at the end, there's the last 5 minutes we have questions. It's about 9 minutes. Yeah, Radha Kunpur.
If one was, it also states in the Praise on Bhut that humility is a quality that manifests, as you also said, when one has got someone they judge, when they actually truly understanding of the greatness of Krishna, that you were saying, but in all of the acharyas, when they speak about these humble prayers and they speak with such humility, these are persons that are already established on such high levels of Krishna consciousness. And with us, who are Ganesha, who are still attached to the senses, or still got very strong egos, and we try to become somewhat humble and try to come up with some feelings of humility, it has a tendency to sabotage our future. That we think that, well, I'm so fallen that I can't make it back to Godhead, that I can't really make it to the end of the course. And so there's a certain sense of a sabotage to our hearts. And
well, I think there's a difference between humility and defeatism. I mean,
can you clear that then, please?
Yeah, if that's what I think you're talking about. Because as you already intimated, that humility itself is the constant associate of prema. Prema and humility, as it's often described, as humility increases, our, I can say, attachment for Krishna increases more and more. Or as prema increases, our humility increases. The analogy is given that when a tree doesn't have any fruits on its branches, then the branches are quite straight. They stand up very straight and without any difficulty. But when they're laden with fruits, for example, in our Jagannath temple in Mayapur, they have mango grove. And so, I think it was sort of Damodar, some devotee over there, years ago was telling me that when the mango trees are full of mangoes, they have anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 mangoes on one tree. 5,000 mangoes, one tree. It's like inconceivable. And at that time, naturally, the branches, they bend down. So when a tree, the analogy is, when a tree is full of fruits, the branches bend down very low to the ground. So when someone is, when the tree of someone's bhakti is adorned with fruits of prema, or heavenly laden with the fruits of prema, then naturally that devotee will bend down and display all the qualities of humility and respect. And there's not even one drop of defeatism or lack of enthusiasm for it, or ashabanda. they're all the mutually compatible qualities, to have the utmost humility and at the same time have the most intense enthusiasm and ashabandha, desiring for some perfectional stage in the eternal service of Radha and Krishna. They're not exclusive at all. They don't exclude one another. It's not that by being humble in a transcendental way you become, oh, I can't make it. That's not what we mean by humility at all. It's quite a different quality. What you're describing is not really the humility that we're describing. You're describing kind of a sense of defeatism. And Prabhupada often said, he was describing the word enthusiasm. He says enthusiasm comes from theos. Theos means theology. Theology means God. So enthusiasm means to be in with God. So enthusiasm, in theology, in theos. So enthusiasm, when one is close to God, or has any connection with God, naturally he'll be very enthusiastic. And as he moves closer to God, he gets more realization of the supremacy of God, and he becomes very humble. And his humility increases, and his enthusiasm increases, his ashabandha increases, and his progress increases, and his prema increases. So defeatism and hopelessness go far to the, they retreat far to the back with this combination of qualities. So I hope that can shed some light on your idea.
Well, I see a lot of devotees who've been following the principle, attending Hare Krishna, going to Mangal Arati, doing everything they're supposed to do. And they've shared that, you know, but in the deep core of my heart, I still don't feel like I can make it. And because of so much of a, you know, so much of a bombardment of this, you got to become humble, you know. You know, like, and it's, instead of understanding it with that enthusiasm and making advancement, they kind of cut it really close in the early stages of the devotion. They cut it, saying, "Oh, I can't make it. I'm not going to be able to make it."
Such devotees are, they're like wounded soldiers on the battlefield, crying for the medic, and the medic is the sadhu. Such devotees, they need sadhu sangha. Because enthusiasm comes from the sadhus. It's contagious. And so that's a misfortune, because there aren't so many sadhus moving around, or maybe their own personal misfortune not to have the association. So if you meet them, then you become that association and enthuse them, reconnect them with theos, connect them with theology. With the theos is the Greek word for God. Theos or theology, the study of God, biology, the study of bios, the study of life. Some other point, Maharaji?
You mentioned ashabandha. So if someone is feeling no hope, and that's hope against hope. So the no hope is his own position, but the hope is that Krishna is merciful.
Even
if one is feeling that way,
as an expression of humility,
I have no hope. But you know, but the hope is Krishna is merciful.
Yeah, that's actually the meaning of ashabandha. Like, then on my side, I'm finite. Like Prabhupada often said, I'm finite. So how can I understand the infinite? It's impossible. But if the infinite chooses to reveal himself to me, then I'm successful. So this is where my fortune lies. We use that analogy in one class about the poor man, the poor beggar in the street. There's no way he can march into the millionaire's house and say, "Give me some money." He has no adhikar. He can't get by the chokidar. He can't get by the German shepherd. But if the rich man one day says, "You know, I put my suitcase full of money. I want to go down to the poor neighborhood and pass out some money today." He may feel like that. That feeling may come in his heart for some reason. So he packs his suitcase full of money, he gets in his Rolls Royce, he drives to the poorest section of town, he rolls down the window, and he looks for some very poor person lying in the street. "Oh, very poor, are you very poor? Oh, I just live in the street. Here's $1 million. Oh, thank you very much." So that's called ahoituki kripa. Ahoituki kripa. Causeless mercy. So that is the sum and substance of progress and the path of praying. Ahoituki kripa. Kripa on our own, forget it. Gopinath, Mama Nevadina Shuno, right? This Sharanagati of Bhakti No Thakur. I'm a wretch, I'm fallen, I'm foolish. But I have hope, because I've seen so many times that this Lord, he has helped the wretched and the most fallen. He helped Jagannath Mother, and he helped Gajendra, and he helped so many Valmiki and Magari and so many he's helped. So he's helped all of them. Won't he help me? So surely he'll help me. So that is that, and by associating regularly with good devotees, then this hope is kept alive. The fire of hope burns brightly in the heart of the progressive devotee. So this is all, these fires are kept going by the good association. And by our own personal realization. Krishna appears in the heart of every devotee in his own particular way to inspire, to enliven, to encourage. Dreams and voices and any kind of way. Otherwise we won't be sitting here, we won't be going forward. Krishna Gopi, Krishna Gopi, Krishna Gopi, Krishna Gopi, right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. So it's as a rasa dance. Every day we're having rasa dance on our beads, right? Hare Gopi, then Krishna. Hare Gopi, Krishna, Gopi, Krishna. So Krishna's there, he's dancing with each individual gopi. 2 million gopis arrived in the rasa dance. Oh, there's only one Krishna? And the night is very short? And how will I get a chance to dance with Krishna? Will my number come up? Oh, here's when you get to the dance, here's the number. Take your number. Oh, 1,999,000. And you'll hear, when a bell rings, you'll see the digital number will come up, and then you can come in and get your chance to dance. Okay. 10,000, 25,000, 100,000, 300,000. Wow, hey, the moon's going down. The moon's going down. The night's going down. Oh, moon's... Oh, 200,000. Oh, what's my number? Oh, 799,000. It's not like that. Krishna, you come there, and there's one Krishna. For each jiva, there's one Krishna and one Radha. It's like this. So individual, so particular. It's not a football stadium with 100,000 people and one football. How can 100,000 people play ball with one football? But in the stadium of love, in the stadium of divine love, in Goloka Vrindavan, then everyone's a player, and everyone gets to play with Krishna. So I think we'll stop there. Madhuram Samapayat. Bhajanahasyam ki jai bhaktinam thakur ki jai vanchakopatruvyascha.
Because I have these cassettes, and I have it, you know, it's going to be an interesting thing. But I have an info.